What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hey, Star Trek fans, welcome back to another episode of the Positively Trek Book Club with me, Dan Gunther, and joining me once again is a familiar voice, and to me a familiar face, but you can't see him. It's Bruce Gibson. Bruce, how's it going?
Hey, it's me, Bruce Gibson. I'm here. Yay. I'm doing well. I'm glad to be here talking Star Trek once again.
Yeah, I'm very happy to have you here. And we have to have you back because we are doing part two of something that we started a few episodes ago. So way back in episode 264, we did Star Trek Explorer, The Mission and Other Stories, Part 1, because this book, which collects the stories from the Star Trek Explorer magazine, had 14 stories in it, and we figured that might be a little bit too much to kind of do a whole episode about. So we had to split it into two, 7 stories each, which is still a lot, but they're interesting stories, and I'm glad we're going to be talking about them today.
Yeah, you know, you just said about the title, The Mission and Other Stories, and it never really occurred to me until now, but the first one we're going to talk about on today's show is The Mission, and then there's like, what, a dozen other stories in here? Like, why did they pick that one to mention on the cover?
I don't know. We'll talk about it. It's one of the standout stories. It's one of, like, most of the Deep Space Nine stories that feature Garak, I notice. So, like, people love writing Garak, which I enjoy. I like Garak. But, yeah, it's kind of funny that our first part of this, you know, The Mission and Other Stories, and we never got to The Mission. We're just getting to it now.
Yeah, it's like saying, here's the DVD set of Star Trek The Next Generation, Season 3 of The Next Generation, Yesterday's Enterprise and Other Stories.
It's just absolutely, or Season 2, Shades of Grey and Other Stories.
And they're in Shades of Grey too, those other stories. Yeah, it's just, I just picked up on that when I was looking at this. It's kind of weird, but then the cover is from one of the other stories. It's not from The Mission. It's, I don't know, it's mm-hmm. weird.
It's a little odd, but I'm excited to be getting to these. And it's funny because the first 7 stories, we had an Enterprise story, we had a TOS story, and then a bunch of TNG stories. And I guess the halfway mark is where we change over from TNG to Deep Space Nine, because this side of the book is all Deep Space Nine stories, except for the last one. They throw a Voyager story in there. So I'm a huge Deep Space Nine fan, so I'm on board, but this is definitely a Deep Space Nine heavy episode today.
It definitely is, yeah. And I mean, I'm also a huge DS9 fan, but I was starting to get a little disappointed to get to the next story. Oh, another DS9. Oh, another DS9. Oh, another I'm like, okay, come on. I was expecting a little more variety, but okay, whatever.
Yeah. So, yeah, we've got... So, if you're following along in the magazines, Bruce, do you have the magazine issue numbers this time around? Or
oh, you know what? I don't think I do.
I just realized, because you have the book now.
I bought
too.
The book yeah. now because last time I was doing from the magazines, but now I got the book. I'm not looking. Oh, wait, maybe I still do. Well, as we talk, I can see if I have that somewhere.
I didn't even think of it till now, so I'm sorry to throw it to you on that. But yeah, so these were originally published either in the print magazines of Star Trek Explorer or in the digital supplement that you get if you subscribe to the magazine as well. So hopefully, yeah, we'll have those issue numbers for you. But the best way definitely is to pick up this hardcover book, Star Trek Explorer Presents The Mission and Other Stories. And I think as we go through these, we'll have some issues with the stories and stuff, but I'm just going to say it right at the top. Overall, I'm enjoying these. I like having new Star Trek fiction, and it's interesting to have new voices bring these characters back to life that I've grown up loving. So overall, I'd say, you know, if you get a chance, pick this up and read some new Star Trek stories.
I agree, because I knew this topic would come up and I thought, wonder what I'm going to say. And I was thinking, you know what? I think there's people out there that say, I'd like to read the novels, but I just don't have time, or it's, you know, too much investment and to take the time to do it. Or I just don't read novels, whatever. But if you want a DS9 fix or TNG or whatever, I mean, these are like, what, 15 minutes, 20 minutes max reading time, whatever. It's not. Mm-hmm.
If that. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's like, why not? Like, you know, once a day or something, or before you go to bed, read a DS9 story. They're really good.
And I mean, the Star Trek Explorer magazine's been doing a great job of bringing these stories and this original fiction and stuff. And I know for the next few issues, they have writers like David Mack lined up. And in this one, we get, you know, Una McCormick, James Swallow, Keith R.A. DeCandido, who hasn't been able to write a Star Trek novel in quite some time. So it's great to have him writing, you know, these short fiction pieces as well, because I really love his work. And then other writers too, like Michael Collins, John Peel, Michael Carroll, really interesting voices and stuff. So I think it's definitely worth checking out.
Yeah, absolutely. And yeah, I do remember seeing recently Keith saying he was doing another one. So yeah, you're right. There's more coming. And by the way, I found my list. I do have the issue numbers ready.
Oh, excellent. All right. Well, with that, I guess let's jump into the first of these stories, The Mission by James Swallow. And you might recognize that name as a longtime Star Trek novel writer and an accomplished author outside of Star Trek in his own right as well. So yeah, The Mission by James Swallow. And where can we find that if you're reading in the magazines?
So it is in Explorer number 6.
So yeah, this is Deep Space Nine. A lot of these stories are going to be DS9. This one's interesting in that it's told in a series of logs as well as descriptions of security camera footage. And this is the story of a Section 31 operative attempting to place surveillance tech and surveil the citizens of Deep Space Nine. And interestingly, having his efforts thwarted at almost every turn by various people here. What did you think of this story, both in the format of how it's told and what the story's about?
I would say that of all the stories, at least in the second half, because I can't remember everything I thought of the first half off the top of my head right now, but in the second half, this is the one that grabbed me up front the quickest. Mm-hmm. Like, because right away I knew just the way this is written, where it's like logs from a Section 31 agent and they're doing something within DS9. And that grasped me right away. I was like, ooh, this is interesting. Like, what is this person up to? And this is their communications back to Section 31 of what they're up to. And so that premise really grabbed me.
Yeah, I like that too. And I like the fact that, you know, it's all from this operative's perspective, or the perspective of the people reviewing his logs and the security camera footage and stuff. And, you know, we occasionally see Odo come in and take care of things, but like, it's not the Deep Space Nine stuff's kind of incidental. Like, it's kind of in the background, but it's all about this guy. And interestingly, this takes place prior to Inquisition. So this is before Julian Bashir is attempted to be recruited by Sloan and all of this stuff. So this is them getting ready for that operation, I guess.
Yeah. And I also liked how the characters, like you said, Odo, they're not identified as their character name immediately, because to the agent, they don't know who this person is. So it's subject one, subject two. So I enjoyed reading it and figuring like, oh, this sounds like Quark, or this sounds like Odo, or whoever, or Bashir, on and on. I just found that fun. And I mean, they're identified fairly quickly. You pick up fairly quickly who these characters are. But again, the agent doesn't know who they are. So I like that.
Yeah, that was pretty cool. One of the things that happened in the last episode where we talked about these, we kind of brought up how there's like a little mistake or a little something in almost all of the stories that kind of bumped us, usually with the artwork or with spelling mistakes or something like that. And there's kind of a major one in this one that threw me off, because so I started reading this, and if you read it too quickly or don't pay close attention, you can kind of be under the impression that this undercover agent on Deep Space Nine in this story is Sloan. And then by the end, this agent, spoiler alert, gets killed by somebody. We'll get to that. But you're like, wait, that doesn't make sense. And I realize what threw me off is whoever did the pictures for this also was under the mistaken impression that the person in the story was Sloan. This person who's undercover as an Akali, they keep saying. And so what they did was they photoshopped a picture of Sloan with Akali markings on his forehead. And I think that's what made me think. I was like, oh, it's Sloan. Okay, I didn't realize it was supposed to be Sloan. Because if you read, like, Sloan is reviewing the reports from this guy, he's not the one on the station, but the artwork makes you think he is, which I think that was a genuine mess up.
That's interesting. Yeah. Okay. So that didn't happen to me. So I didn't think it was Sloan. I thought it was this person was on a mission from Sloan. And yeah, on page two, though, there is a picture of Sloan, but I guess I didn't think about it, or I think I was already under the impression it was a different agent. So seeing Sloan's picture, knowing that this mission was on behalf of Sloan, that didn't throw me. So it's interesting you're mentioning that, because I had this issue with others things in the book, but not with this story.
Yeah, I'm a little ashamed to admit that, like, I was also under the impression that it was someone else, but then, like, I saw the picture and I didn't remember the issues that we had with pictures before. And I was like, oh, that's supposed to be Sloan. I totally misread that. Oh, well. And I kept going. Oh, no, wait. Someone else totally misread that, not me. Darn it. So,
but, yeah, I can see that being a problem, because, yeah, well, there's other things like that later on that I want to address like this. But yeah, it's a little deceiving to see Sloan there, and you're not really getting the full name of the person you're dealing with. So, oh, this must be Sloan, right? And, you know, there's several pictures of Garrick, and, you know, maybe you're expecting more Garrick than there is. Or, yeah, I will say this. The best thing to do, if you can, when you read these stories, is try to ignore the pictures as best you can.
I hate to say that, but yes, you are right with that, for sure. This is not the fault of the story at all. Like, the story is really good, but, like, a couple times during the story, and I had to reread it, a couple times during the story, I was like, this doesn't sound like Sloan at all. They really not cap. He's more competent than this. He wouldn't obsess about this. Oh yeah, no, it wasn't him. I just fell victim to a trap.
But I mean, it doesn't really take too much away from the story, right?
No, absolutely not. So I do have to say, I like the ending, of course, where I guess what we take from this story is Garrick doesn't like competition, because this agent has found evidence that there are other intelligence operatives who came aboard who met grisly fates, right? Like, there's Klingon intelligence that didn't get very far. He finds, you know, evidence that this Orion intelligence agent was killed just before he himself is dispatched by, it turns out, I think we're very much supposed to realize, Garrick. And it really just seems like, you know, I'm the spy around here. I can't have all these other people horning in on my territory.
Well, and that's the thing. Like, you know, first it's like, okay, what happened to these other agents, or, you know, this Klingon or this Orion or whatever, these other people who've been there? And my first thought was maybe Garrick. Because out of all the main characters in DS9, more than likely Garrick would be up to something like this. But yeah. Now going back to what we were talking about before, we have two pictures of Garrick in here. So that doesn't help keep the mystery, you know, from being revealed. Like, it's just, yeah, it makes it a little obvious. But I mean, I really enjoyed this story. It's one of my favorites.
Yeah, he's a little glib when he talks to Bashir at the end, right? It's like, oh, nothing you need concern yourself about, Doctor. I was just cleaning house. I want to see the rest of that conversation where Bashir's like, what the hell are you talking about, Garrick? Cleaning house? That's ominous. Oh, never mind. Don't worry about that.
Yes, Doctor, it's just cleaning house. Okay. What does that mean? Yeah, okay, I guess you're just cleaning your house. Okay, yeah, but yeah, because you have to be suspicious of Garrick, right? I mean, Bashir's probably always going, what is he up to now, you know? And then, like, was this ever discovered later? Did they ever discover Garrick was doing these things?
I'd say probably not.
Probably not. But it'd be interesting if they did, if there was a part two to the story of Garrick trying to hide the evidence of things that he has done and he's getting caught, or they're suspicious it's him, but he still covers it up well, that he's covered his tracks or something.
Well, I have to say, I really enjoyed this one. I think it makes sense that the book was named after this one. I think it's one of the top ones we've read.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Yeah. And like I said, it really grabbed me from the very start. You know, some of these stories, it takes me a while to really go, oh, this is what's going on. Okay, now I'm really starting to get into this, you know, but this one right away, I was into it. So good job, James Swallow, because I have a feeling you're listening. So I'm just letting you know. And thanks. Thanks for the like on Goodreads when I said I read this book.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, let's move on from that one to the second story in this book, I guess the ninth story in the book overall. Things Can Only Get Better by Una McCormick. Right off the bat in the picture, it's going to be Garrick again. Where can we find this? In which magazine?
This is also in number 6. So these two stories are together in that magazine.
A Garrick-themed issue of the magazine, it seems.
Well, anytime I see Una McCormick name, I think, oh, it's a Garrick story, probably.
Yeah, and anytime I see Una McCormick's name and it is a Garrick story, I know it's going to be a good one. Actually, even if it's not a Garrick story, I know it's going to be a good one.
Yes.
Yeah, so I was excited for this one. This one's interesting in that it takes place at a very specific point in the Deep Space Nine story, shortly after Damar learns about his family's execution, because he's a part of this resistance. And that would be in the Deep Space Nine season 7 episode, Tacking Into the Wind. Very specific during what they called the final chapter of Deep Space Nine, right? We have the resistance fighters, which are being led by Damar, Kira, and Garrick, making their way back into Cardassian space aboard this Cardassian ship they have. En route, they receive a distress call from a Cardassian freighter which is carrying civilians under attack by the Jem'Hadar. Kira really wants to intervene to try and rescue them, but Garrick is opposed to that. The story is kind of a debate between the two of them. And even before the distress call, there's kind of a bit of friction about Kira's past and does she enjoy killing Cardassians? And is this just, you know, her enjoying this again? And then the distress call happens and the debate is kind of like, should we save them? Should we not? Like, what kind of people will we be? We have to maintain our cover. What's that worth? And all that sort of thing. So what were your thoughts on this one? Because I have some thoughts on this one for sure.
Well, I like what you just said about there's like two debates going on. So before the distress signal comes in, Kira and Garrick are discussing, like, he's kind of, you know, prompting her in this whole, like, you know, oh, you know, I bet you've, you know, enjoyed killing Cardassians, and how many have you killed? And she's basically like, look, I don't keep track of that. I'm not killing just to kill. It's not that I'm out just to kill Cardassians. I'll keep count. I'm sure you've got blood on your hands too. So they're having this debate about they both have blood on their hands. So when the distress signal comes in, she wants to rescue these Cardassian civilians. And Garrick, who this is his people, is like, no, we've got to stay on the mission. We're going to reveal ourselves. You know, you shouldn't do this. You shouldn't do this. You shouldn't do this. The thing I liked about this is you can almost take Kira in two ways. One is that early in her life, did she enjoy killing Cardassians and killed Cardassians because they are Cardassians? And now because the Federation has been part of her life, she's more sympathetic and more accepting of Cardassians, and that's why she's willing to save the civilians? Or is it that she's never enjoyed killing Cardassians? It had nothing to do with anybody who's a Cardassian. She's just killing those who are killing others. And it doesn't matter what your species is, that, you know, it's who you are and not what you are, which I think is more of the latter when it comes to Kira. But I also felt that when she finally made the decision not to rescue them, it came just a little quick. I just would have liked maybe, to me, I felt I need something a little more convincing from Garrick or something to make Kira just go, no, I can't. We got to continue the mission. I just would have liked maybe something a little more there.
Yeah, I get that. That it's kind of almost a victim of the format again. Like it's got to be only so long, right?
Right.
I kind of thought of their conversation in the context of, do you remember, it's a very famous scene in the episode The Way of the Warrior, the root beer scene in Quark's with Garrick and Quark, right? It's like the Federation, it's, you know, it's like the root beer, it's so bubbling and cloying, but if you drink enough of it, you start to like it. And like that kind of feels like the conversation that Garrick and Kira are having, where they're kind of both acknowledging that they both have been fundamentally changed by the Federation, I think, and that maybe they have to kind of go back to the people they were a little bit and be a little bit of the less caring people that they were before the Federation in order to accomplish their mission. It's a bit of a sobering thought. Like it's a little bit of a, what was the line I really liked? So Garrick says, we've been living a long time now with the Federation. Learn to do things the Starfleet way. But we both know some wars can't be won like that. And like that to me was like that. It's a chilling line because it's true. And that's sad. Like that's, they have to go back on, they have to regress almost in order to fight in the trenches now with this war they're fighting right now, which is tragic and sad, but it shows also how far both of them have come over the course of Deep Space Nine, that they have to, it's not easy for them to do that now. They have to actually like consciously turn their back on some of their principles now. And I think that says a lot about their characters and how far they've come.
So do you think old Kira, the one before DS9, before the Federation, how would she have handled this situation if she was on a Bajoran mission and there was civilian Cardassians? Do you think she would try to attempt to rescue them?
No, I don't think so, because she was fighting Cardassians at the time. But like, even putting that aside, I think she was colder. I think she was more pragmatic, more kind of the way that they have to be now. She was in the middle of that, so she was already that way. And it's her time with the Federation that has caused her to become more caring about that and more quick to answer a distress call and do the Starfleet thing, right?
Yeah, no, I mean, yeah, I agree with that. I guess I was thinking, I kind of picked up on exactly what you're saying, the root beer thing and everything. But, and maybe because we don't know Kira that well from before the Federation, but I think you're right. She may not, I guess in my mind, I was thinking she would still look at the Cardassian civilians as civilians and maybe still maybe want to rescue them. But I think the Federation has brought more and more of that out of her. I don't know. That's interesting. But I did pick up that the story was that these people have changed.
Yeah.
You know, it's different now and how they have to handle things, but they still have to look at things the old way versus the new way and which is the right direction to go in.
And I mean, I don't disagree either. I think the old Kira would have probably been like, I would love to rescue them. They don't deserve to be there. They should be rescued. But I think she very quickly would have in her mind gone, but we can't, like, nope, to maintain operational whatever, we can't. Nah, that sucks. Oh, well, you know, whereas now she has to actively fight to get to that point where she can allow these people to die.
And that's a good point, too, because it's a different situation in the past because they would have been fighting Cardassians. She would be on a mission to get the Cardassians. So why go and save Cardassians where you're trying to get to the Cardassians, right? It's a little bit of a different situation, too. But see, this is good. This is what makes this a good story, that we dig into it like this and have these discussions.
Yeah, for sure. I really enjoyed this this story. I love the ending, too, where Damar comes out and he hasn't witnessed any of this. And he's like, oh, did we change course? What's going on? And Garrick says, don't worry, Leggett. Commander Kira has everything under control. I thought that was a really good ending.
Yeah, and the static is still coming through the comms.
Yeah. Beep, and it turns it off.
Yes.
Yep. So I think it's pretty obvious. I really enjoyed this one, definitely. Yeah,
same here, same here.
Well, Deep Space Nine continues, but in the next one, it's a bit of a prequel story. We get Bashir back at the Academy in Frontier Medicine by Michael Carroll. And which issue of the magazine can we find this one in?
This is also in number 6 of Explorer, but the supplemental.
So the supplemental, we should say, just if people are unfamiliar with that, if you're subscribed to the magazine, you should get a digital supplemental, an email that has extra digital bonus content that isn't in the actual magazine. As far as I understand, if you buy the off-the-shelf version, there's no way to access that, I believe.
Yes, I think that's true. Unless you contact the publisher and beg them to send you the PDF.
Which I have to say, as a subscriber, I actually had to do already as well. So,
Yeah, I had to do it for, I think, the first issue. Yeah. Which I think that's, we got revealed to that. I think it was James Swallow, because we reviewed the first issue that had two stories in, and he's like, what about mine in the supplemental? And we're like, what supplemental?
Yeah. Yeah. Sadly, that's how we found that out. But yeah. So if you are subscribed to the magazine and you don't have a digital supplemental sent to you, get in contact with the publishers. They should be sending you that. So,
or wait till the book comes out and you get them all.
Yeah, that too. That too. So Frontier Medicine by Michael Carroll. We have Bashir still at Starfleet Academy. He's close to graduating, though. But he and his fellow medical students are being wined and dined by this Ferengi company. And it's kind of a thing they do to try and entice them away from the Federation to do medical research for their company. This struck me as very real world. Like, this happens in the real world today, I'm sure, with these, you know, biotech companies trying to get, you know, medical students to be on their research teams and stuff, as opposed to, you know, whatever other careers they might have. So That was interesting. We have Bashir and this fellow medical student, Stosk, Vulcan, who is researching this rare disease to find a faster and more effective treatment. While they're en route, they're at warp, they come under attack, and they're boarded by members of the Orion Syndicate. And in a twist, it turns out that Stosk has been working with them and has been going to the academy to learn about this disease because the head of the Orion Syndicate has it and needs to be cured of it. So they're there for Stosk to operate on her. Bashir helps out. He's instrumental in treating her and saving her life. And in order to show her gratitude, the head of the Orion Syndicate does not kill everybody aboard the ship. So happy ending.
Yeah. So I got one tiny nitpick. It's not bad. I mean, I say my only criticism, I have one criticism of it and one thing I really loved about this. So I'll touch on the criticism. The one thing was Stosk is, like you said, focused on this at the academy. He's been employed today. He's following this disease to cure the disease. And when the time comes, he's basically like, well, Bashir's really the best person to do this.
Yes.
And I was like, this does not show well for this guy. Like, you know, like, what was the whole point? And she knew, the leader of the Orion Syndicate knew of Bashir. Like, she, I know who this guy is. I've heard of this guy. Like, why didn't they try to employ him? You know, that's not really a nitpick or a criticism, but I'm just saying, like, why, if she knew of him and how smart he was, you know, I'm sure they thought Stosk was really smart too, and that's why they picked him. But then when he's just basically like, no, we probably better let Bashir do this. I was just like, really? Okay, fine. But yeah.
Yeah, that was a little bit. I kind of picked up on that too. And I wondered if like his secondary mission a little bit was to like make sure Bashir was there because he knew he'd, I don't know, but yeah, he doesn't put in the best showing here.
Yeah. But the thing I loved about it, well, I guess there's two things I loved about it. I love how it ends with him realizing this thing that they're doing out on this frontier is like, oh yeah, I might want to go out there, out to the edge of space, which of course eventually leads into DS9, the Emissary episode. But I like that little twist at the, well, not twist, but that little
nod towards
him. Oh yeah, nod of him just like, oh yeah, maybe this is something I'd like to do.
Yeah, where you could make the most difference, right? Like you'd be bored in a Starfleet sick bay where, you know, you treat the occasional whatever. But out there on the frontier, as he says in Emissary, that's where real heroes are made.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I like that.
I enjoyed this one. I thought it was pretty good. You know, because it's set so far back, I feel like there's a little bit more leeway to play with Bashir's voice and have him be a little bit younger and more brash here. I think that worked. I think my favorite part comes at the very, very end, though, where he's made this difference and his friend, you know, is going to beam out with the Orions and he goes to thank Bashir, but Bashir doesn't even notice because he's already treating the other injured people. Like that just, it shows his character right there that he's like, he didn't even notice this. He's already treating some guy that got injured when they boarded. That's great. That's so Bashir. I love it.
Yes. Great point. I love that too. I had forgotten that part, but yes, that was an excellent piece to that ending. I also like how he solved the problem of the venom and the parasite of cutting the arm off. But he had that Orion's glove over that to prevent the x-ray so that the parasite would go to the arm where the x-ray is not affecting. So it goes under the glove and then cut the arm off. I was like, ooh, that's genius and gruesome at the same time.
Yeah, I didn't see that coming, but that was clever. It was would have been interesting to give her a heads up first, though.
Yeah.
But then we as the readers wouldn't have been surprised, so.
Yeah, no, I like that. Yeah, it was a surprise. Like you said, I was like, whoa. Oh, and I was like, did I just read that right? Wow. Okay.
Yeah. And they're like, oh, here's the arm as a souvenir. She's like, oh, okay. Ooh, boy. But yeah, all in all, I liked that one. I thought it was it adds a little bit of interesting flavor to Bashir's backstory. You know, we get little stories like this feels like a story that in those quiet character moments, right, where they're explaining the motivation for something. Bashir would say, oh, there was this one time shortly before I graduated, and you'd get this like quick little story about this. And I think it fits that way. Fits well that way.
Yep. Agreed.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
This episode of Positively Trek is brought to you by our supporters on Patreon. A special thank you to our Constitution class supporters, Jim Stoffel, Joyce Mirren, and Paul D. Kinnear. To help out with the podcast, visit patreon.com/positivelytrek, where for a small monthly donation, you can get early access to ad-free episodes, shoutouts, exclusive content, associate producer credits, and more. Thank you so much for listening, and live long and prosper. Well, let's go to the next one. Another Deep Space Nine. There's a lot of Deep Space Nine stories in this. By special request by John Peel. And this is despite the picture we have at the start with the old style comm badge and stuff, it takes place later in the series with Vic Fontaine. So by special request, where can we find that one?
This is in Explorer number 5.
So this is a different story. The story starts out with this question between Bashir and O'Brien asking whether or not Vic Fontaine is alive. And there's a little bit of a debate back and forth, like what defines life, yada, yada, yada. But Bashir is ultimately wondering this question because apparently Vic has expressed a wish, which he says, you know, a computer program can't wish for something it doesn't have. Does that prove that he's alive? Now, interestingly, it turns out that his wish is to sing a duet with Nyota Uhura, you know, Nichelle Nichols' character from Star Trek, the original series. And it ends up being, a nice little tribute to Nichelle Nichols at the end where they sing this, you know, for one night only duet. They have to get Sisko to ask the still living Uhura permission to create the hologram of her. We don't see that conversation, but I can't imagine it was not awkward. I don't know. This was an interesting one. I have very mixed thoughts about it, but I'm curious what you thought.
Oh yeah, I'm the same. I would say out of these 7 in the last half, this is maybe my least favorite. But it started off really good. Like, I really love the debate. Is Vic real? Is he life? You know, all that debate. It's such a Star Trek thing. We've had it in other Star Trek stories. But, you know, and I was really getting into that debate. Is he life? You know, he other holograms, like these people sitting here drinking a cocktail or eating food. They, you know, not really. But Vic seems to be aware of himself. And he remembers things from the past. And you know, they're talking about, Data's real, Data's life because his creator is human. But then they're like, yeah, but the computer that makes Vic was created by humans. So is that like, so the debate going on, I was really kind of getting into like, okay, I want to see how this resolves itself. So I like the fact that it came to, well, Vic has a wish. And because he has a wish, you know, is he alive? You know, and I'm like, okay, I like where this is going. So the first half, I'm like, I'm all into this, right?
Yeah.
But then it was the last half where it lost me because first it was like, well, he has this wish to sing with someone. And this someone he wants to sing with is alive. And, you know, Federation, not Starfleet, but Federation protocols, rules are that you have to get that person's permission. And my first thought was, is that true? Have we ever heard that somewhere before? Like, so then I start running my mind of things like, okay, so what? Barclay, like, was he in violation for creating people from the ship on his holodeck program? And like, all of a sudden my mind starts going to other things like, okay, well, what does that mean? Like
Geordi LaForge and Leah Brahms?
Yes.
I mean, problematic enough already.
Yeah. So I'm exactly. Those things are going through my mind right away. And, so that kind of took me out of the story because I start thinking through that and I'm like, okay, but that it makes sense in a lot of ways. I can see where people are like, look, I don't want myself being recreated on holodecks and people play, you know, so they have to get permission. I could see there maybe being some kind of law or something. So yeah, okay, I'll accept that. But then who he picked, 2 reasons I had a problem with that. One is I was like, how does he even know of Uhura? I don't know. Maybe it's mentioned earlier and I missed it that he was going through a Federation database or Starfleet database, but that just seems so random. That seems like a fandom thing that now I feel like I'm reading fan fiction. And the second thing, especially this, was the full page picture of Uhura before they even reveal who, like, they wait till the very end to say who this is, but we get a full fled page picture of her. And I'm like, I know who it is because her picture's right there.
Yep. All of those things I agree with for sure. So, yeah, I mean, it's obvious, like, it's supposed to be a tribute to Nichelle Nichols, and that's fine. That's nice. But I had those same questions. I was like, how has Vic even heard of Uhura? Why does he want to have a duet with her? Like, why is this such a big... We never get an answer. We don't know Vic's motivation for this. Like, why does he want this? And then, like, just the unfocusedness of the story. Like you said, that first half, it's interesting. And then it gets to that. And then the story is just all about this. And it's... It feels like two different, like it just shifts gears and doesn't make a lot of sense. And like, don't get me wrong. I think it's nice to have a tribute to Nichelle Nichols. And I appreciated that. I thought that was kind of sweet, but it just didn't seem to fit in this story very well. Like it didn't, it was very strange to me. I don't know.
Yeah. I thought the wish, I like the idea of the wish. Does that make you alive? But I wanted the wish to be something that connected more to Vic.
Yeah.
Like my wish is, hey, you know, hey guys, my wish is to see where you live. I want to be able to walk DS9. And then they're like, okay, how do we make this happen for him? Well, we can recreate DS9 here in the holodeck or in the holosuite. But then this just goes to prove, as much as we're working to try to make this happen for him so he can see where we live and what our world, shows that he might be sentient, that he might be alive. He might be like, you know, like the fact that we're doing this for him, we wouldn't do that just for a computer. Like I was hoping for something more like that, more meat at the end, that's just like, hey, we're all going to show up to the holosuite and it's Uhura. Yay.
Yeah. Other little things that bugged me a little bit is at the beginning, O'Brien's hanging out in Vic's and Bashir comes over and he's like, oh, that annoying young brash Dr. Bashir. He's annoying sometimes. And I'm like, by the time they had Vic, like they were really good friends. That just seemed like a little bit of a regression to an earlier season version of them. Didn't really ring true to me. And then also little tiny niggle. They kept calling it the holodeck on Deep Space Nine. It's a holosuite. They get that right. Just kidding. But the other thing, and this isn't a criticism, I think it's a little cutesy reference, is when, you know, they talk about, oh, O'Brien, you should try and help make Vic's wish come true. And he's like, thinking to himself, what am I, some kind of genie? But they spelled it G-E-N-I-I, which is the plural form of genie. So like it kind of works, but he also played a character, Cole Meany did, on Stargate Atlantis, who is the military leader of a group called the Genii, and it was spelled like that. So I was like, is this a cutesy little reference? And I think it is.
Probably.
Because like, why would you spell it like that? I want to talk to John Peel and be like, did I catch a Stargate reference there? I think I did.
I think you did. I mean, I'm not well versed in Stargate, so I wouldn't know this, but it's also italicized. So I feel like that's, yeah, it's supposed to nudge you towards that. I think you're right.
And it felt like forced to get him to think that, right? It's like a wish. Oh, I have to grant a wish. What am I, a Genii?
Oh, that's so funny.
I thought it was cute. Anyway, it sounds like this one's not a favorite of ours, and it's definitely not a favorite of mine. I appreciate the tribute to Nichelle Nichols. I want to make that clear. I think that's nice, but it felt forced.
Yeah, it almost felt like two different stories. Like it started off as one and then switched to another.
Yeah.
Yeah, I appreciate it too. It wasn't bad. It was just, yeah, it just kind of shifted and it didn't work for me at the end.
Well, we've got, following that up, another story by the same author, The Victim by John Peel. And this one, again, Deep Space Nine. And it's in which issue?
This one is in Explorer number 7.
So again, like I said, this one is also by John Peel, who wrote the last story we talked about. And this one is about Garrick. It's Garrick making his third appearance in this collection. So it's basically a fairly small story, just one scene. During the Cardassian occupation, Garrick has been sent to assassinate a Bajoran Vedic. And we have it's a younger Garrick here, who's a spy and a tailor, but he's not an assassin yet. From the other story we talked about earlier, we know he dabbles in that later, but at this point in his career, that's not really part of his day-to-day. He's hesitating to do this, and it's kind of this back and forth, this duet story between these two characters, where this Vedic named Shawa is kind of helping Garrick realize that his assignment to assassinate her is a test of Garrick's loyalty more than just a mission to silence this Vedic. So he doesn't want to kill this Vedic, but the Vedic kind of realizes that there's only really one way this can go and forces Garrick's hand. And Garrick ends up being kind of complicit in the assassination of this Vedic in order to not be revealed as questioning the Cardassian state. Basically. So this is a really interesting story, and I'm really curious your thoughts on this one.
This one, like you say, is written by John Pill, like the last one, but this one is a favorite of mine. So the best way for me to describe what I think about this one is I feel like this Vedic Shawa out Garrick's Garrick. And in a lot of ways, it's almost like she's a lot like Garrick in a way. Very calculated, seeing things for what they really are, or, you know, that you might not notice how things work and what. And she's, again, like you said, this is a young Garrick. I see her having more wisdom than Garrick, and this type of wisdom is something Garrick starts to learn more of as he grows. So that's why I really like this story.
Yeah, I really liked this story as well. It's one of my favorites in this collection for sure. I love that it gets boiled down to three options, right? So Garrick could, as he wants to do, stand for his principles, refuse to kill the Vedic, go back to his superiors and inform them of this, in which case they're going to send someone else to kill the Vedic, and Garrick himself will probably die. Option two, Garrick submits to the state, becomes their tool, becomes an assassin, becomes everything the Cardassian state wants him to be, kills the Vedic, and goes on to be a Cardassian enforcer. Or option three, he does what he has to do to survive. So he kills the Vedic and maintains this resistance in his heart while at the same time projecting that, like, oh, I'm on board, but working in the future towards overturning that and making things better. And obviously, in all three states, the Vedic dies, and she knows this. Mm-hmm. She's already jumped ahead to that part. She knows she's dead no matter what. But she cares what happens to Garrick and what that means to the future. And I loved that. And I'm reading the story and I keep hoping there's some way the Vedic survives. But very quickly you realize, along with her, that no, that can't happen. And yeah, she forces his hand. She puts the phaser back in Garrick's hand. And you still kind of think like she's giving him the choice in that moment. But she reaches over and pulls the trigger. And she dies with Garrick holding the weapon. What an ending to the story. And then also the revelation that the title, The Victim, right? By the end, you're like, who's the victim here? Mm-hmm. Is it the Vedic who's been killed? Or is the real victim Garrick, who's been set up by the Cardassians in this loyalty test? That it's his Kobayashi Maru. There's no way to win. There's no way to save the Vedic here.
Yeah. And that's what I love about it. That's why I'm saying in a lot of ways, I feel like she out Garrick's Garrick, like, because she comes to that conclusion so quick. He's like, you know, why aren't you fighting for your life? Don't you want to live? And she's like, I'm already dead. Like, I'm going to be killed regardless. He's like, what are you talking about? But I can see Garrick explaining that to someone like, oh, you're already dead. And let me show you why. There's three options and they all result to the same thing. You know, I can see Garrick thinking that way, but he's not. He's not there yet, but she is, right? And she gets it. I'm already dead. I'm sitting here breathing alive today. But no matter what you decide to do at this moment, Garrick, the outcome is I'm going to be dead. And I mean, it's just, and like you said, going through those three options, you're like, oh my gosh, yeah, she's right, you know? And it's like, might as well just do it. And what does she think is the best option? Because if she's dead, what does she care? So if she's going to die, sacrifice herself, something that is the best option. There's the greater good out of the three, even though it's not, nothing really good comes out of it. And also talking about the prophets, you know? And he doesn't believe in the prophets. And she's basically like, it doesn't matter what you believe in, you know, it's just, maybe it is the prophets, maybe it's something else, whatever, but the path has already been chosen. It's just, you know, or the end of the path has been chosen. Which path are you going to take to get there? Yeah, this was a great one.
Yeah, I agree. This one really, it's one that like I found myself thinking about for quite a while afterwards, and I could easily see this as being a part of Garrick's past. And he's such an enigma throughout much of Deep Space Nine. You know, you're never really sure until towards the end exactly what side he's on, right? Like in the early seasons, is he the face of the Cardassian state? Is he their representative still on Deep Space Nine in the shadows, kind of thing? But then by the end of the series, he's working with the Federation to overturn the Cardassian government, to rid them of the Dominion and bring something brighter to Cardassia's future. Was that seed planted way back at this point? Like, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, absolutely. Yes. Yes. So this is definitely a winner. And going back to pictures, the very first picture in here, the Vedic, you see the back of the Vedic. It looks like Vedic Wynn. And I'm like, wait, am I reading about Vedic Wynn? But no, it's a different Vedic. Wait, you know, again, I try to ignore the pictures.
Yeah. Yeah. She's got her, and it's the Kai's robes too. It's not even her Vedic's robes. Yes. So yeah, that was a little bit, I was like, oh, Kai Wynn is gonna, and then you start reading. It's like, oh no, this is way back when.
Yeah.
And this is someone else. What's going on?
But yeah. I kept picturing her, though. It was in my head, and I kept trying to picture a different-looking woman, you know, at the beginning. Yeah. I was like, it's not her. I know it's not her, but I keep picturing her. Nope, I got to get away from that.
So, yeah, definitely a winner in my book. I really, really like this one. So, great job, for sure. So, Keith R.A. DeCandido is next. Friend of the podcast, of course. With the story, You Can't Buy Fate, another Deep Space Nine story, and the last Deep Space Nine story in this collection. Which magazine is this one in?
So this one is in Explorer number 7 as supplemental.
So this one takes place after the end of the Deep Space Nine series. Colonel Kira is in command of DS9, and Nog and Ezri Dax are en route to make first contact with a new species in the Gamma Quadrant. We find out through the course of this that Nog has a little bit of a crush on Ezri. She, I mean, who wouldn't, right? Ezri's pretty cute. But so they get to the Gamma Quadrant to make first contact with the species. They approach the alien vessel and all the systems start to go offline, and eventually the runabout explodes. Nog wakes up in the custody or under the care of these aliens, the Oral Hodish, I think is how we pronounce that. But apparently, in all the confusion of body parts and stuff, they thought that the Dax symbiont, I guess, was an organ belonging to Nog. So they tossed that in his abdominal cavity. And now Nog has been joined to the Dax symbiont and has access to all of the Dax host's previous memories. They're eventually rescued. They have a solution to this problem with the radiation coming off the alien ship that destroys Federation ships. Nog and Ezri are closer now because of their shared experience. So that's a very quick overview of a much more complicated story. But that's kind of the gist of it. What did you think of this one?
I like this because because of the Ezri Nog relationship, exploring that a little more. And his, yeah, he's got a bit of a crush on her. And, you know, they're on this first contact mission, and he's thinking back to the last first his very first contact mission and how well that didn't go very well. And he's worried about that. And she's got all these life experiences, but for Ezri, this is something new for her too. So, and then I guess this alien ship they were approaching, they said, you know, their shuttles, you know, Ezri and Nog's shuttle starts to go haywire, and they're like, can we, you know, hey, can we just beam over? And I'm like, oh, so we know this first contact alien race knows about beaming, or they can beam, which later then Nog asks them to beam them into EV suits. So I was just kind of like, oh, okay, I guess we know that they have transport technology. That took me out just a little, because like, how do they know all that? And okay, not a big deal. But the one thing I did kind of struggle with was the Dax symbiont. Like, did it come out of Ezri? And that's why they saw it on the floor and go, oh, it needs to go into one of these people, I guess Nog. Because that's what I was a little confused about. I read several times where even Nog says, well, she must have been wounded near the pouch. Okay, wounded is one thing, but are we saying, like, they didn't remove the symbiont from Ezri and put in Nog, right?
Yeah, that was the only part of the story that kind of took me out. Like, in my mind, you know, when you're reading, you kind of fill in things and you imagine, like, oh, okay, so I guess Ezri was horribly injured and the aliens recognized that this thing wouldn't survive unless they used Nog. But no, apparently, according to Nog, they just, like, thought it belonged to him, so put it in him.
Yeah.
Which, that seemed very weird. Like, I felt like that needed a little bit more explanation there.
Yeah, that took me out, too. I was struggling with that one, because, like you said, Nog thinks that the aliens think that this must belong to him. And I'm thinking, well, that means it was separated from the two of them, and they didn't know which one it went to.
Yeah, know? Which I think that's what the story's saying. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's weird.
It wasn't that clear to me. So I don't know. Then I was thinking, how did it get out of her? Like, even, like, I don't know. Anyway, not a big deal. Like, but I really did enjoy it. It was a sweet story. And, you know, I like how it ended with, you know, the solution he came up with having the Dax symbiont in him about how to deal with this alien ship and, you know, that disrupts their technology. He comes up with the solution, but when the symbiont's out of him, oh gosh, what was it? I don't, you know. And she's like,
I liked that.
I remember. I know exactly how you and Dax came up with this together. And then the very, very end, that he realizes that she knows that he has a crush on her.
Yeah, that moment, like, he's like, oh. Yeah. That was sweet. I really like that. Yeah, that moment where he realizes he doesn't remember, like, I hadn't thought of that. And I was like, oh, crap. But like, oh, Dax is there. Right. Okay. So they can work together and that's good. But that was well done. Like, I hadn't thought of that, yeah, he wouldn't remember that anymore. That was in the other brain that was attached.
Yeah. No, but I really liked it. And, you know, over time, I have come to appreciate Nog's character more and more as the years go by. Like, I always liked Nog's character, but I didn't realize how much I really have grown to like the Nog character. And Aaron Eisenberg, I think, has a lot to do with that. Over the years, I've started to realize really what an exceptional actor he was.
Absolutely. And it should be said, this story is set up as a tribute to Aaron Eisenberg, and it's mentioned at the end, dedicated to the fond memory of Aaron Eisenberg. We miss you, buddy. And it's lovely. It really put me back in mind of, you know, seeing Aaron on screen playing Nog and making me realize how much I miss that for sure. So yeah, that was lovely.
Sometimes I forget he's gone. I thought the other day I was watching a DS9 episode and I was like, I really want them to do a Captain Nog series. And I went, oh, wait, no, forget that. You know, I was like, dang.
Yeah.
But yeah. And Aaron was a really nice guy. I only met him one time. I might have been with you, I think.
The two of us met him together. He's so cool. Yeah. He was amazing for sure. Well, enjoyed that one for sure. That was nice. But yeah, Moving on to the last story in the book and the only non-Deep Space Nine story in this last half of the book, Summer Days Can Last Forever by Michael Collins, a Voyager story. And where can we find that one?
That is also in the supplemental to issue number 7.
This story, Summer Days Can Last Forever, is told through a series of diary entries of a boy living in a town called Patterson's Creek, August 12th, 1957, which turns out to be this day that the boy seems to be living over and over and over again. Over the course of this day, each iteration of it, he keeps encountering the crew from Voyager, but doesn't seem to remember them each time the day resets itself, until the doctor cures his mono. He has mono, and this treatment somehow allows him to retain his memories through each time loop. He ends up helping the Voyager crew realize what's going on with this town. It turns out that it is no longer on Earth. It is on a planet in the Delta Quadrant. And this alien spacecraft that's being held there had something to do with ripping the town away at warp or something and depositing it there. But if they are able to reset it, it would return back to the original time and place. And that happens, I guess.
Yes, it does.
So it's a Voyager story, so it's weird and confusing, but that's kind of what I got from it. What are your thoughts on Summer Days Can Last Forever?
Well, first of all, Michael Collins, yeah, he wrote and illustrated this, but I just glanced at the first illustration. I didn't really look at it much, but we see our Voyager characters in this, but at the time I started reading this, I didn't notice them because I didn't look at it much. Because like I said, I'm not trying to look at the pictures too much when I'm reading it. This is one of these stories where I read it and I'm not picking up on it or not liking it or I'm a bit confused. And so, but then by the time I finish it, I start to realize, oh, this is actually pretty good and I want to reread it. I haven't had the chance to reread this, but I do want to reread it again, knowing that I'm not going to be confused anymore. But just to specify, I know this kid is writing in his diary, but it's all on the same day, and he's kind of repeating some of the same things. And I'm like, well, that's weird. Why would a kid keep writing the same things over and over again in the same day? Like, just. And then he meets three strangers, and then he does another entry where he talks about these three strangers as if he hadn't met them before or something. And I was like, what? This doesn't make it. Like, why was this kid writing so much in his diary on the same day? And this is where I got a little confused at the beginning. I thought this was T'Pol and the other two Vulcans from Carbon Creek.
Oh, okay.
That were now visiting Patterson's Creek or whatever. Like, I don't know. Because he even says when he meets the three strangers that the woman was very calm. And I'm like, yep, T'Pol in her Vulcan-like way would be very calm, right? I know one of the characters mentions about Captain Proton, but I thought, oh, well, that's a nice Voyager callback because them living in this time, they would know of Captain Proton. But then when I get together and, you know, then I turn the page and I can't help but noticing I'm seeing Voyager characters. I'm like, oh, wait a second. Wait, no, these are Voyager characters. but then I start picking up on what's happening, right? And things are being revealed. Now I'm starting to get into it. I was starting to really enjoy it at this point. I don't know. Were you confused at the beginning?
I mean, yeah. And I mean, I think intentionally so, right?
Right.
Like it's, what's going on? So it does benefit from a look back over after you finish the story. But yeah, I was a little bit confused. I wasn't sure what was going on. And you kind of sort of start to piece it together and realize what's happening. And for me, like I enjoyed it. I thought it was interesting, but a few things just kind of niggled at me. Like I, at first, once you realize they're Voyager crew, they're like, so are they back on Earth? How are they on Earth? What's going on there?
And right.
That eventually gets answered. And okay, I guess that kind of makes sense and stuff. For me, what ended up taking me out of the story was it's told in these diary entries, but by the time we get to, you know, towards the end with these diary entries, they're very long and very detailed with like the exact conversations that he had with all of these people. And I was like, this doesn't really fit this format anymore. Like, I'm not buying that this kid is writing out all of these very detailed conversations he had with these people. So that bugged me a little bit. Like, it just kind of pulled me out of the story a bit, but it's interesting. The story itself, I think, was kind of cool. It maybe didn't need to stick so slavishly to that format. I don't know.
Yeah. And I would say early on, it's in his voice when he's quoting the characters. So it kind of sounded a little off in the beginning too for me. Like, and then I realized, but this is really his voice as the characters and what they're saying. And not, because I was like, that doesn't sound exactly how Janeway would say. Oh, well, yeah, because it's him, you know?
Yeah.
Like, it just took a while for me to kind of get used to it and pick up. But you're right. I mean, once we get further in this, this would be a lot for him to write. And I don't see a kid writing it quite this way. Right. But you have to do it to make this story work for the reader.
Yeah, exactly. Like, for example, this conversation he's having with the general, right? Like, horse pucky, why I oughta. But general, you have a flying saucer. He held up his hand. That vehicle we shot down, we've determined is a risky spy plane. My scientists think they've worked out its systems, got it all fired up. I exploded, but it's not. It's from space and we're in space and we're gonna. He grabbed me by the collar, dragged me out. I'm like, no, this isn't, no kid's writing this in his diary.
Yeah, I think you get me. I think you have a good idea there. I think it could start off with the diary, but when we get to the whole meat of this, then it should be just some narrative from the author. And then we get to the end and we're back to the journal with his last entry.
Yeah. Interesting enough story. I enjoyed it. I thought it was very Voyager. Well, I'll put it that way.
It was. Yeah, it definitely was. So yeah, I enjoyed it. It was fun. It felt like a Voyager story.
When I was reading the story, I was actually in the same mind as I was when watching the recent Discovery episode, Face the Strange, with the kind of weird, was it the time bug that made the, like, everything. I had that same feeling that, like, oh, this Discovery episode, this is like a Voyager episode. I had kind of that same weird feeling watching that as reading this story. So I think, yeah, Michael Collins has done a good job of capturing that Voyager weird feel in the same way the Discovery writers, intentionally or not, captured the Voyager weird feel in that episode.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, the Discovery episode has that Voyager feel to it, too. Yeah, yeah, this is very similar to that. Yeah, I like that.
Well, there we go. That's all 7 stories. So we'll kind of do what we did at the end of the last episode. What were some of your favorites in this batch?
Oh, wow. I'm going to say my favorites were The Victim, The Mission, and Things Can Only Get Better were my top 3.
We're very, very, very similar on that one. I think if that's the order of yours being the favorite, mine's close. I think Things Can Only Get Better by Dr. Una McCormick is my favorite of this collection. I really like that story. The Victim by John Peel is next. I thought that was just such a good story. Really made me think for a long time after that. And then, yeah, The Mission. The Mission is my number 3 by James Swallow.
Yeah, I mean, I enjoyed them all. There wasn't one that I didn't enjoy. I mean, I would say the weakest one was probably By Special Request. It started off so strong for me and then it petered out. So, but, you know, all of them I enjoyed. I would definitely recommend this whole book of stories to anybody.
Yeah, definitely. You Can't Buy Fate, Summer Days Can Last Forever, Frontier Medicine, I thought were all really good as well. And yeah, By Special Request, probably my least favorite, but still like well worth the read and a nice tribute and stuff. So yeah, definitely a good collection for sure.
Yeah. And I just want to, I'm going back to my notes about the issues. So this whole book, and I know we've said which issues as we've gone along, but just to summarize it, all these stories come from issues 4, 5, 6, and 7 and all their supplementals. So those 4 issues are all included in this book.
Awesome. Well, Bruce, this has been fun to have you back. We'll have to have you on again sometime soon for sure. But until then, where can people follow you online?
Oh, my gosh. I'm not really very active on Twitter or X or whatever you want to call it right now, as I used to be.
The bad place.
Right. But you can still reach out to me there. I rarely tweet or X or whatever we're calling it now. Admiral_Rex. That's Admiral with the underline Rex. I'm also on Instagram at just Admiral Rex. No underline, underscore, anything. Just Admiral Rex. You can also find me on Facebook as Bruce Gibson. But yeah, I guess that's it. But, you know, if you're in the Atlanta area, yeah, maybe follow me more on Facebook or Instagram, because I do shows, different like comedy shows, improv or sketch shows. And actually, I'm getting ready to start doing a series of comedy shorts that will be eventually on YouTube.
That's cool.
Yeah.
We'll definitely. Yeah. I want to check those out when they come out for sure.
Yeah. I don't know. Necessarily not always in them, but I'm producing them. So I might be in some, not in others, but I'm involved in some capacity.
Oh, awesome. Well, you can find me on Twitter at Kurtratz, and also on Mastodon at Kurtratz at mstdn.ca. And I'm on Blue Sky now at Kurtratz as well. Instagram at Kurtratz47. You can find the podcast on our Positively Trek discussion group on Facebook. We'd love to have you join us there and talk about this book or any other topic within the Star Trek universe. And you can email us, positivelytrek@gmail.com. We would love to hear from you. So thank you so much for joining us. We will see you again in a future episode. Until then, as always, stay positive. Positively Trek is produced and edited by me, Dan Gunther, and co-produced by Barry DeFord on Treaty 8 territory, the home of the Beaver, Cree, Dene, and Métis people, whose histories, languages, and cultures we respect. We acknowledge the many First Nations, Métis, and Inuit who have lived in and cared for these lands for generations.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.